Hello and welcome to Culture Shorts. This is Mariam Bhatti. On today's program, Culture Shorts takes a closer look at Belong To's new project for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered asylum seeker and refugees. On the program, Owen Drunan interviews Marisa Ryan, coordinator of the project, and later on we'll listen to Vox Pops recorded at the project's launch. But first, here's a quick song by Florence and the Machine, and the song says, "You've Got the Love."
Sometimes I feel like throw my hands up in the air. I know I can count on you. Sometimes I feel like saying, "Lord, I just don't care. But you've got the love I need to see me through." Sometimes it seems.
That was Florence and the Machine with "You've Got the Love." Let's go to an interview with Marisa.
This is Owen Drunan for Culture Shots. I'm here with Marisa Ryan, project coordinator of the LGBT Refugee and Asylum Seekers Project at Belong To in Parliament Street, Dublin 2. Marisa, welcome to Culture Shots.
Thank you.
Marisa, can you explain to our listeners your role within Belong To?
Absolutely. I'm the project coordinator for the LGBT Asylum Seekers and Refugees Project, which is a project that Belong To conceived of last year and was funded through the European Refugee Fund and the Office for the Promotion of Migrant Integration and PUBL and the HSE to look at the situation of gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender asylum seekers and refugees in Ireland and to improve their safety and quality of life.
Marisa, why is the project from Belong To so important to the safety and more so to the security of the LGBT asylum seekers?
Well, firstly, we find that LGBT asylum seekers and refugees suffer from multiple marginality, which means that they face isolation and marginalisation as a result of a number of various factors affecting them. So, for example, on the basis of being an asylum seeker and refugee in itself, then on the basis of race, then on the basis of sexual orientation and other marginalities, which can include gender, disability and so on. And the nexus of all these types of marginality come together to put young people in a very grave protection situation. So, for example, for a young person seeking asylum in Ireland who might be, for example, an 18-year-old gay man from Malawi, for the sake of argument, you're housed in direct provision when you come here, which is the government system of housing asylum seekers until their refugee application is processed. And during that period, they are housed in shared bedrooms. They are working, or their caseworkers and everybody else coming in contact with them have not had LGBT training. It's a very unsafe and insecure environment because of levels of routine homophobia they encounter, as well as the trauma that they may have suffered in their country of origin. And there is a very high incidence of, for example, mental health issues affecting this this proportion of asylum seekers and refugees. But our key problem would be that they lack safety and security because they're marginalised from support and services, and that's why we're working with support and services to make them more aware of the situation of LGBT asylum seekers and refugees.
How do you as an organisation, how do you approach your programme to that specific group of people?
We have quite a clear network. We started off by convening a project steering committee, which is for us a good example of interagency cooperation. We got the key stakeholders working in both the asylum and refugee area and the LGBT areas and brought them together at a round table to discuss what the issues are and how we should go about trying to address them. And as a result of the steering committee involvement, which has been terrific, we have identified the key stakeholders, including government agencies and statutory bodies, NGOs, psychosocial support services, who could benefit from being trained on LGBT awareness and awareness of LGBT asylum seekers and refugees. And we're going to roll out this training programme up till autumn of this year.
And how did Belong To actually incorporate this programme into your own organisation?
Given that Belong To has been providing a direct youth service to all young people in Ireland, including asylum seekers and refugees, separated children, those who are here with subsidiary protection, we came to realise ever since 2003 that we do get a high number of LGBT asylum seekers and refugees seeking one-to-one support and our other youth service provisions, and they are massively disenfranchised from the society in Ireland. There are serious protection gaps pertaining to their situation in Ireland, and as a result we decided that we needed to create a dedicated project to address their needs within our wider youth service.
And how did you actually compile the data to get for the demand that led to implementing this project?
Well, through our youth service, we were recording all the time since 2003 the situation of LGBT asylum seeking and refugee young people. But then in 2011, I also conducted a needs analysis where I spoke to both service providers working with asylum seekers and refugees, including key stakeholders such as the Irish Refugee Council and other legal aid providers and so on, and also LGBT organisations who had come in contact routinely with asylum seekers and refugees. And our youth worker also interviewed LGBT asylum seeking and refugee youth themselves. And as a result of the information gleaned from this needs analysis, we then conceived of a project that would address the needs of service providers working with the target group, in order to mainstream LGBT asylum seekers and refugees in the services that they can use, and also to improve protection, safety and quality of life for the target group.
Is this the first type of project for refugees and asylum seekers in Dublin, or is there a plan to roll it out across the country?
Well, it's the very first dedicated service for LGBT asylum seekers and refugees in the whole of Ireland, and actually in many parts of Europe as well. We initially had planned to have a more national level project, but given that it's a pilot, in the end it was decided that we have to focus firstly for the first 2 years at least on Dublin and Meath, and we are going to roll out the project till it ends in January 2013 and hopefully get more funding after that.
And if there's anybody listening to the show this evening, what's the best way for them to actually get in contact with your organisation?
If you're a service provider, feel free to contact me. You'll find my details on our website, which is www.belongto.org. And if you are a young person under 30 years of age who's an LGBT asylum seeker or refugee and wants to have one-to-one support or anything of the kind within a youth service, contact John Duffy, who's our project youth worker. It's a free service and it's 100% confidential, and you can get details again on our website, www.belongto.org.
Marissa, I'm afraid that's all we have time for today, but I'd like to thank Marissa Ryan, project coordinator from the LGBT Refugee and Asylum Seekers Project. Marissa, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Owen and Marissa. Next up, this is Regina Spektor with Fidelity.
Shook it up.
I never loved nobody fully. Always one foot on fire. When it breaks my heart.
That was Regina Spektor with Fidelity. Next up are two recordings from the project's launch event, in which Patricia Brazil, lecturer in law at TCD, speaks about her research as a national expert for Ireland to the European Fleeing Homophobia campaign.
So, as mentioned, I was the national reporter for Ireland on a project titled Fleeing Homophobia, which was also an ERF-funded project looking at the practice throughout the EU in terms of LGBTI asylum claims. And a number of common themes emerged from that project, and the report was published in September 2011. I'd urge all of you to take a look at it if you're interested in these issues. It's a really, I think, groundbreaking piece of research. One of the issues that was identified in particular in that report, and it's an issue that does have resonance here in Ireland, is the use of stereotypes in making decisions on LGBTI asylum claims. an expectation, and perhaps it may be an unconscious expectation on the part of a decision maker, that an LGBTI asylum seeker will conform to a particular stereotyped ideal of behaviour. So the crude examples given in the report were that a lesbian woman would present in a butch way, or that a gay man would be flamboyant or camp. And an LGBTI person who doesn't meet that stereotype might find themselves on the wrong side of a credibility finding. As I say, it may be conscious, it may be unconscious, but I think this work that Belong To are going to do is so important in challenging decision makers in particular to be aware of the dangers of resorting to those stereotypes, to be always conscious that they are not safe bases for decision making, and instead to investigate an LGBTI asylum claim in a sensitive and appropriate way. Another issue that was identified in the Fleeing Homophobia report was the use of what's called discretion-based reasoning, and I won't get too legalistic, but this is the idea that an asylum seeker, an LGBT asylum seeker, can return safely to his or her country of origin and be safe by being discreet, and I'll use the term in inverted commas, to be discreet about sexual orientation or gender identity. At a basic level, to require a person to conceal a fundamental aspect of the personality, such as sexual orientation or gender identity, is a violation of the fundamental dignity of the human being. That has been recognised by UNHCR, and perhaps Sophie might address that, but also I think there are various decisions from other countries which recognise that. But we have found in some instances discretion-based reasoning being used in the process here in Ireland, and I think that's certainly a very important issue that I hope Belong To will address. As well as the fundamental dignity of the human being, there are, of course, other problems with discretion-based reasoning. I think the Fleeing Homophobia report put it very well when it said the closet is a very unsafe place to be. You can return a person to a country on the basis that they'll be discreet, but that person has little or no control over whether they're actually identified as LGBT. A person can be outed against their will by a partner, by family or friends, or by the community at large, and has little or no control over that fact. So I think it's important to also bear that issue in mind, and also the fact that if an LGBT person does successfully conceal his or her sexual orientation or gender identity, that person will most likely live in a permanent situation of anguish and fear, which again is simply inhuman and degrading in and of itself. So I think it's so important for this training to address these issues, to tease out these issues, and to ensure that that type of reasoning forms no part of any asylum decision in this country. Sue has also mentioned the issues that arise in direct provision, and I won't reiterate those, but it was an issue that I found in my research as part of the Fleeing Homophobia project. I met with LGB NGOs who told me that they would make initial contacts with LGBT asylum seekers in Dublin, but would lose contact with them very shortly afterwards when they were dispersed down to a hostel elsewhere in the country, where they're unable to return to Dublin for basic financial reasons. Oftentimes, these hostels are in areas where there are no LGBT supports in general, much less specifically targeted LGBT asylum seeker supports. Sue has also mentioned the issues of fear and safety within direct provision centres, where the person may find themselves facing the same homophobic or transphobic attitudes that they have in fact fled from. And again, I hope that the relevant service providers give serious and urgent consideration to this most important issue through this training. The Fleeing Homophobia report did identify many gaps in the protection of LGBT asylum seekers, both in Ireland and throughout the EU. I welcome the important work that Belong To are doing in this pilot project, and I hope they succeed in bridging some of those gaps.
Next up, Sophie McInnes of UNHCR in Ireland speaks to the value of this project to the human rights of refugees and asylum seekers.
Reaching out to young people who fled persecution and who may never before have discussed their sexual orientation or gender identity is a challenging task. And Ireland really is lucky to have an organisation like Belong To with just the skills required and the generosity to share them, which is very important. I'm glad to see people here from a wide range of agencies who will have an opportunity to benefit from the project, which crucially is supported by the Department of Justice and the HSE. Globally and in Europe, the situation of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex people has become a much more public issue in recent years, as have the challenges they face. There is greater awareness that claims by such individuals can indeed be included in the refugee definition contained in the 1951 Refugee Convention. There are many reasons for these changes. Some relate to gender openness or greater openness towards LGBTI concerns generally. Some are surely due to sustained advocacy by human rights and LGBTI rights groups such as Belong To, and many of you in the room here today, not least Senator Norris. The publication of the Yogyakarta Principles in 2007 was an important milestone. They affirm clearly that sexual orientation and gender identity are integral to everyone's dignity and humanity, and that they must not be the basis for discrimination or abuse. In UNHCR, the situation of asylum-seeking and LGBTI people who are refugees, who have fled persecution and ill-treatment, is a priority concern. UNHCR's work has involved clarifying the applicable international legal standards to ensure the proper assessment of asylum claims. Our work has also involved raising awareness more generally about the challenges faced by displaced LGBTI people and tackling the homophobia that exists within our own organisation and amongst those we work with. UNHCR participated in the Fleeing Homophobia project, which Patricia just spoke about, and she led on the research here in Ireland. As the first study to map national practice, the project revealed inconsistent practice, as Patricia has spoken about. This is perhaps unsurprising, given that the common European asylum system is far from complete generally. However, it's also very worrying. It means that depending on where LGBTI asylum seekers seek refuge in Europe, they may face dramatically different outcomes, some of which are not in line with international and European refugee and human rights law. Identifying these inconsistencies, the bad practices and the good ones, as well as the standards that should apply, are a first step towards rectifying the situation. The Fleeing Homophobia report goes a long way towards doing just this, and the project we are launching today has the promise of further assisting in developing consistent best practice in Ireland. Our hopes for this project include that young LGBTI persons will have a greater awareness of where to go to access support, and when they engage with services and officials at all levels of national administration, they will meet with people who understand their circumstances and have the skills to assist them. This is particularly important in cases where an LGBTI person might disclose their sexual orientation or gender identity at a late stage, or may struggle to put into words their experiences if those experiences are taboo or against the law in their country of origin. We also hope that the project will assist the ongoing efforts of many organisations across the EU to tackle the notion that LGBTI asylum seekers may not need international protection because they can avoid persecution by being discreet at home. This is the issue that Patricia touched on earlier. The UNHCR position on this issue is that a person cannot be expected to conceal his or her identity in order to avoid persecution. As affirmed by numerous courts, persecution does not cease to be persecution because those persecuted can eliminate the harm by taking avoiding action. Just as a claim based on political opinion or nationality would not be dismissed on grounds that the applicant could avoid the anticipated harm by concealing his or her beliefs or identity, applications based on sexual orientation and gender identity should not be rejected merely on such grounds. As the Immigration and Refugee Board of Canada put it, we do not tell claimants that they have a right to practice their religion so long as they hide it. A hidden right is not a right. The Fleeing Homophobia report pointed to an example of good practice in Ireland, where the notion of avoiding persecution by exercising discretion was rejected by the decision maker concerned. This is very welcome. However, the report also identified inconsistent practice on this point in the past, and this project provides a good opportunity to promote awareness of the good practice established in Ireland and beyond. In other EU member states such as the UK and Belgium, UNHCR has worked together with the national authorities to elaborate specific policies and guidelines on the assessment of LGBTI claims and the delivery of training based on those guidelines. The success of these processes has been due not least to cooperation and constructive dialogue with specialised lesbian, gay and bisexual NGOs and civil society. Such cooperation has also proven productive in the context of gathering country of origin information and other matters. We are delighted to launch this training project today, which offers an opportunity to build on similar projects undertaken in other countries and to contribute additional good practice examples from Ireland to developing LGBTI practice across the EU. To close, we wish everyone who belonged to every success with the project, and we stand ready to assist you whatever way we can.
Next, we'll listen to Vox Pops recorded at the launch with Sue Conlon, CEO of the Irish Refugee Council, and Dr. Nazi Eldin, Director of the HSE Health Promotion Office.
This is Roslyn. I'm here with Sue Conlon from Irish Refugee Council. Please, can you tell me, what do you think of today's training, and how will it have effect on LGBT in Ireland?
The training that Belong To are going to do is going to be very important because it's going to make sure that a very vulnerable group of young people are actually brought to the attention of different service providers, be they governmental, non-governmental, local community organisations, who will hopefully at the end of the training have a better understanding of the particular needs and vulnerabilities of LGBT asylum seekers and refugees. So it is extremely important that information is taken out there in order to try and reduce the isolation and their vulnerability.
And do you think, apart from, the definition of the refugee, is the person that fear persecution, race and so on, with this LGBT, do you think the Ireland is going to put their law into the new bill they are going to set out this year?
Well, the definition of a refugee also includes someone who fears persecution as a member of a social group. So sexual orientation would come within that, and therefore someone who's LGBT would be able, if they can persuade the authorities that they're at risk because of their sexual identity, their orientation or whatever, will be able to get the protection they need. We've heard from a young man today who got that protection from the Irish authorities. So it's a case of making sure that the authorities recognise that sexual identity itself, not necessarily sexual activity, is sufficient to be able to give refugee status to someone.
Is there anything that belong? I've talked to the government about the accommodation for LGBT. You know, a lot of them are facing problem with direct provision. Some of them, they have, you know, maybe they are gay, bisexual, and something, and they put them in the room with someone else. That is going to be a very big difficult for them. So, what do you think about that? Do you think they are going to have accommodation for them, or they are just going to be keeping the same system?
I think, as things stand, it would be unrealistic to say the government is going to change the system of direct provision. It doesn't, for example, provide separate accommodation for women who can be vulnerable because of domestic violence and other problems. As things stand, it's the system of direct provision that is wrong and is damaging to a whole load of people, not just those who have a particular sexual orientation. For example, you know, those who suffer from particular medical conditions such as AIDS or HIV are very vulnerable because they have to use their medication within the confines of a room that's shared with others. So at the moment, the government is digging its heels in and it's saying, this is the system we want, it's working okay. And gradually, the Irish Refugee Council and other partners have to expose the damage that is being caused by direct provision. So we've got a long way to go, but I think the momentum is building, and that hopefully will improve the situation for LGBT asylum seekers as well.
This is Hailu Netianwa for Near FM. I'm here with Dr. Nazee Eldeen, who is the head of promotions for the Health Service Executive. Pleasure to have you, sir. Good morning.
It's a great to be with you.
Thank you. It's good to see you supporting an initiative, a vital initiative such as Belong To. What was the impetus?
There are lots of reasons for it. The Belong To organization have done a need assessment on this group of people, and the need assessment showed that there is a great need from an awful lot of aspects, whether it's educational aspect, whether it's a social aspect or health aspect. Some of it also in relation to justice system and things like that. So the impetus for it was coming from Belong To. The need for it had been established, and then they came with a wonderful idea, i.e. they want to kind of base their approach and practice on evidence. Evidence that it will work, that it will be acceptable, that it wouldn't be stigmatizing in any way or anything like that, but also achieving results. And the best results you achieve is when you have a partnership. And the partnership aspect of it is just what clinched the whole deal. Because if you have the Irish Refugee Council, if you have Bubble, another department of the government, if you have, you know, the HSC, and you have the young people themselves and other NGOs working together, you're inevitably going to have a better result.
The cipher is complete.
Hey, yeah. Absolutely.
Great. Well, it's great to see the HSC. Normally they get pressed for not being progressive, but I'll commend you on this, and we look forward to it flourishing into...
Thank you very much. I really appreciate what you're saying.
It's the truth. It is what it is, you know. That's why we're a community radio station. We tell it like it is. You know?
Fantastic.
But it's good been a great pleasure to hear you speak and to meet you. And hopefully we'll see you again sometime.
I hope so too. Good luck. So,
thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, and thank you to our guests. This has been Mariam for Culture Shots. Tune in every week, Mondays from 6:30 to 7 on Near FM. To listen back to past episodes, simply log on to www.nearpodcast.org.
The content and views expressed in this programme are those of the participants alone and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of PUBL, the Office for the Promotion of Migrant Integration, or the European Commission.
This project is co-financed by the European Commission under the European Integration Fund and is supported by the Office for the Promotion of Migrant Integration in the Department of Justice and Equality and PUBL.